Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joe. People started calling me Hollywood in the motorcycle thing years ago, and it stuck like flies to flypaper. It's not my personal favorite, but everybody still calls me that. But at any, by the way, I think I should tell you this. I'm not Vince Neil, okay? I'm not Greg Allman. I don't tattoo for a living, and I'm not in a band. Every time people see me, they ask me all of that. I do have pictures of people come up and try to take my picture when my wife and I are at dinner. They'll say, "Could I get your picture?" And I'll say, "Who am I?" And they'll say, "I know who you are." And I'll say, "Would you tell me who I am?" Because I don't know. They'll say, "You're Tommy Shaw of Styx." Anyway. I love y'all so much. And man, this Celebrate the Miracle is so true about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank the committee that invited me to come speak with y'all, because I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you can hear that in my message. I'm going to start y'all off. How many of y'all like, well, let me ask you this. I always ask this question when I come to Atlanta. How many of y'all have ever heard of the Crystal Palace? Raise your hands. Man, oh, I am at home, son. My uncle is Sid. He owns the Crystal Palace. Yeah. So, I know I'm with some hard partiers now. It was on Stewart Avenue. It was a pretty wild after-hours club, and my uncle owned it. But anyway, I'm going to start y'all off with, it's 1975. Jerry Lee Lewis is playing at a big honky-tonk in Montgomery. And I'm a kid that's struck in horribly with alcoholism. And I hope that when I share with you, you'll get some real ideas about how my drinking affected me, because this is how I operated, okay? First of all, if I was going out to drink, I couldn't go out and pay big prices for drinks. I just was unwilling to do that. So what I would do is I would get me a six-pack, and I would drink it quickly. And I'd get me a good buzz going before I ever got to the bar, because I wasn't going to spend stupid money. So I get me a good buzz going, and I head to this big honky-tonk. Now, I'm 18 years old. My family's in the automobile business. They've decided, and by the way, I'm a car salesman. I knew you could guess that as soon as you saw me. So, anyway, I just got me some brand new shiny business cards. I was very excited. My family was going to make me a car salesman. So I had my brand new shiny business cards, and I had a six-pack under my belt, and I head to this honky-tonk to hear Jerry Lee Lewis, and I'm hammered when I get there. Well, now you're going to find out this in my talk as well. I love females a lot, okay? So as soon as I get to the honky-tonk, the first thing I do is I'm going to select me a female, okay? So I'm wearing a cowboy hat, and I go in, and I find me this little cutie pie. You know, she was just precious. I thought, man, this is the one right here. So I bent over and picked her up and threw her over my shoulder, and I'm walking around the bar. I don't know whether you can identify this or not, but I'm walking around the bar. I'm ordering double shooters of Jack Daniels, chasing them with Budweiser, just like I always do, you know, because I already got my six-pack in me, so I'm just not getting good to go, you know. And I don't know about your drinking, but I would do this thing. I have invisibility. Now, the way my invisibility works is this, okay? You could be with your wife sitting at a table in a honky-tonk, and I could be drinking. And I would just decide I wanted to look down your wife's shirt. Well, I would just all of a sudden go invisible. Now, you could not see me looking down your wife's shirt. And it worked really great. I loved it. The only problem with my invisibility is I would go in and out of invisibility. And I would never know whether I was in it or out of it until all of a sudden, man, I would just be out of it and you would know. But that enters into this story, okay? So I done got hammered. I'm drinking these double shooters, and I'm passing out business cards to everybody. I'm saying, here, come see me. I work at this car dealer, and I'm handing my business cards out everywhere, you know. And then as I'm carrying this girl around, finally I set her down. Now there's people everywhere, and she looks at me with big eyes and smiles ear to ear and says, show me what you got. Well, I'm invisible anyway. So, I mean, I can't, at that moment, what can an alcoholic do? You can't say no, you know. So I pull down my pants. Next thing I know, I'm bouncing across the parking lot of the honky-tonk. Now, this is, my family used to get me cowboy boots for Christmas. I loved cowboy boots. I wore cowboy boots forever. And they would always look at me on Christmas morning, because I would get them that night to go out. And they would look at me on Christmas morning and say, what happened to the tops of your cowboy boots? Here's what happens to the tops of your cowboy boots. When you pull your pants down, the reason they call them bouncers, okay, is because they use your head to bounce the doors open on the bar. And they grab you by your collar, and they grab you by your belt. And when they throw you through the doors, you skip on the tops of your cowboy boots across the parking lot, okay? So I get up. I shake myself off. Now, I don't remember this because I'm not only invisible, I'm in a blackout. This never even happened in my mind. So I walk away from this bar, and I head out because I got some friends that live near it. I just decide I'm just going to walk there, you know. So as I'm walking, there's a huge ditch that runs behind this honky-tonk. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to follow this ditch. And I'm going to wind up at Teddy's house if I just follow this ditch. The problem with a ditch and being drunk is this, okay? If you're walking beside a ditch, this big entrenchment, it will pull you in like gravity. You start leaning toward it because it's so deep. And I'm thinking, I can't fall in. I'm trying to lean out. And I remember this vividly, okay? Next thing you know, I'm scaling the side of this concrete ditch. And I'm trying to get out, but I can't. This is not a dream. This is stark raving reality, okay? Well, at the bottom of this ditch, and these ditches' walls are as high as that, at the bottom there's sawgrass and mud. That's all there is. So now I'm waist deep in the mud, and I'm trudging through the bottom of the ditch trying to figure out how to get out because I'm too loaded to climb. At some point, I got out of this ditch. Okay. And I don't know where I'm going, but I decide that I'm just going to just keep walking. And the next thing you know, I walk right back up on that honky-tonk. So help me God, this is a true story. I walk up on this honky-tonk, and I am waist-deep covered in mud. My cowboy boots are full of water and mud, and I'm just fresh out of this ditch. And as soon as I get up there, there's people working the door and folks hanging out at the front of the honky-tonk like there always are. I'm excited to see somebody. They are not excited to see me. Okay? Soon as they recognize who I am, they say, there he is. And I'm thinking, what? Because I don't remember none of it. Okay. Now, let's fast forward. The next morning, I go to my car lot to work, okay? Remember, I'm in the car business. And everybody knows it, right? I gave out my business card. So when I get to the car lot, I'm sucking on a water cooler. And I'm drinking that. If you've drank, you know what I'm talking about, right? I want to climb in the water cooler. And I'm sucking. And my cousin looked at me and he said, "What did you do last night?" And I said, "I went to see Jerry Lee Lewis." And he said, "Well, there's been people all morning driving in here wanting to see the guy who pulled his pants down." True story. You know what, man? I don't understand anything like I understand alcoholism. And I did not want for my evenings to go like that, okay? And I just want to share with you a couple of humorous stories about my drinking. And I can laugh at these things now, but I want you to know something, man. The morning that he told me that them people were pulling in there, I wasn't laughing. And the thing hanging on the wall back here about being a miracle is Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, I had these two little honky-tonks on the Troy Highway in Montgomery, Alabama when I was a kid. I lived between the two of them, okay? One of them was called the Paradise. Now, everybody needs a paradise in their life, you know. One of them is the Paradise, and the other one is the Limit, okay? And I bounced between these honky-tonks all the time. Well, me and a friend of mine go to the Paradise, and we're drinking, and I'm hammered. And I don't know about you, but I'm such an alcoholic. You know, most people like to stay out all night and enjoy themselves all night. That's not for me. I drink hard and fast, and I'm hammered and ready to pass out by 9 o'clock. Okay? So I look at the guy who's driven me to this honky-tonk, and I said, and I'm drunk, and I'm ready to go. It's 9 o'clock. And I said, "Ronnie, listen, man, I gotta go." And he said, "No, we're not going right now." I said, "Please." He said, "No, we're gonna have one more." I said, "Okay." So I drink another beer. Man, I get done with that beer and I said, "Ronnie, look, I gotta go, man. I mean, I need a bed. I have got to go." He said, "We're gonna have one more. Just calm down." I said, "Man, listen, I really gotta go." So I drink another beer. True story. So Ronnie dangles this carrot in front of me, having me drink one beer after another one, till it is closing down, last call, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I am mad as hell. I'm so damn mad, man, I'm ready to kill him. And finally they said, "This is the last round," and I'm so excited. Because I'm about to go home. And so help me God, man. When we walked out that door, there sat my car. Man, I'm so mad. I want to kill him. I want to kill him. And I unlocked the driver's door of my car, and I got in it. And I slammed that door, and he walked around to the passenger side and punched the door for me to let him in. And I cranked that car up, and I drove right out of there. You know what? The car business has been really good to me, and I have met some magnificently interesting people in the automobile business. I have, man. I learned how to drink by a guy named Pete, and Pete would take a half a pint of whiskey. This is how I learned how to drink, okay? Pete would take a half a pint of whiskey, and he would walk up to that water cooler at that car lot. And he would crack the seal on that half a pint, and he would throw it in the trash because he was not going to need the top no more. And he would turn it up, and then he would take him a sip. And we'd talk. And he would turn it up, and he would take him a sip of water. And I thought that was how you were supposed to drink. And that's how I learned how to drink. I'll tell you what else car men will do when they know if they're really good. And I'm not saying everybody in the car business is an alcoholic, because they're not, okay? But a lot of the ones that I ran around with were. But what they would do to me as a kid is they would walk up to me. Now, I'm 18 years old, and I didn't know whether I was an alcoholic or not, because I didn't even know what an alcoholic was. I thought an alcoholic was a person who was a skid row drunk that lived in the backseat of automobiles. That's what I thought an alcoholic was. But I can remember shaking one morning. And I looked at a guy who was he was my dad's age. He was 45 years old. I was about 18. He was the first person I ever moved out of my family's house with. He was one of the best car salesmen that has ever put on a pair of shoes. He could sell more cars from his house drunk than most salespeople could sell on a car lot. And I remember shaking one morning, needing a drink, and he walked up to me and said, "Son, let me run you up to the store to get you a Budweiser." I said, "Boots, I can't do that. People who drink in the morning are alcoholic." He said, "Son, you're already an alcoholic. Let's go get you a drink." And he relieved my mind, and I will always be grateful to him for that. But anyhow, when I moved in with Boots, me and Boots had an insane situation. I was 18 years old. He was 45. He was driving Cadillacs off the car lot. He worked for my family. He was a hustler. And he would drive between these two honky-tonks with me, the limit and the paradise. And we lived like that. But he was a raging alcoholic. And when I first moved in with him, I thought he was sober. He used to say, "I'd picked up enough white chips back then in AA." He said, "I picked up enough white chips at Alcoholics Anonymous to tile my bathroom." But in the morning, I knew he was having problems when I would hear him cough real bad in the morning. And what he was doing was he was coughing. To hide the sound of him busting the top on a Budweiser. And then when me and Boots started drinking together, it was on. It was on. He already knew I was a raging alcoholic. But I walked into our apartment one afternoon at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Let me back this up. I ran into this guy at a place where I work. And he was red-faced. I could tell he was a raging alcoholic. And I love him to death, and I was a little worried about him. I said, "How's everything going in your life, buddy?" And I patted him on his back. He said, "Man, I just got a divorce." I said, "What happened?" He looked at me and said, "You know what? She says I pulled a gun on her." And he said, "I ain't never pulled no gun on her." And I said, "You know what, man? Listen to this right here, and let me share this story with you." I walk into my apartment, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I open the door, and there's Boots. And Boots is laying in the floor of that apartment with a shotgun, and he's trying to get his toe in the trigger and the barrel in his mouth. All the lights are off on the apartment, and I wrestle the shotgun away from him, and I said, "Look, man, we ain't going to do none of that." And I took him back to his room, poured him in his bed. True story. So I walk to the refrigerator and I get me a beer. Because I have just saved my friend. I'm his champion. So I sit there drinking a few beers, thinking about how good I am and how pathetic he really is. And as I'm drinking and the evening goes on, I'm thinking about, and I like females a lot. Have I said that? And there's a cutie pie that has moved in upstairs from us, you know. And I'm thinking about how could I break the ice with her? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I want to meet her. I mean, she's just darling. I've just got to meet her, you know. So as I'm drinking, I'm thinking, you know. I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take this shotgun up to her apartment. And I'm going to inform her that I have just rescued my friend. So I tip up to her apartment, and I'm hammered, and I've got my shotgun, okay. And when I get up there, I hear all these people talking in the apartment. I'm thinking, oh, my God, she's having a party now. This is the late 70s, and it was pretty off the chain, you know. I've got my shotgun and I'm listening to them, so I'm thinking, what am I going to do to break that? I mean, I don't want to do, you know, I want to make this good. I want her to really like me, right? I want her to really like, and I'm hammered, you know, my thinking's not really clear, okay? So what I decided was this, okay, this is what I'm going to do. What I'm going to do is just swing the door open and pull the shotgun on everybody. And then we're going to laugh because they're going to say, that's funny, right? That's hilarious. Then I'm going to tell them that I had just rescued my friend and I was just kidding, right? Some of y'all laughing, man, because you think like this, okay? I know you do. I can see it in your face. This makes perfect sense, okay? It does. So that's what I do. I swing the apartment open. I say, ah, with my shotgun. Okay, 3D guys have grabbed the shotgun, wrestled me to the floor with a horrified look on their face, okay? I'm laying on the floor, flipped out because I can't believe they could even move that fast, you know? And I'm thinking, you know what, I have just blown my future with her. Right there. Man, I believe it's over with. I believe it's over before it's ever even started. I told that story to my friend who was red-faced, who had been told he had pulled his gun on his wife. And I said, you know what, I don't know whether you pulled your gun on your wife or not, but this is what I know. I know that in my right mind I would never pull a gun on nobody unless I believed in my heart I was going to draw my last breath. But when I'm drunk, my whole future's up for grabs and I don't never know what I'll do. And I said, I found a solution at Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you ever feel like coming, I would love for you to. Now, he hasn't. He hasn't. But this is what I'm really sharing with you, and I'm going to read this because I can quote this book a little bit. But I don't want to mess this up. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And what I want you to know about that deal is this. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, those little stories that I have told you that we have laughed from our toes, I could tell you did. I couldn't have even told those to my most trusted friend because I knew that they would judge me. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have found that you don't judge me. You even do better than that. You love me, and you understand exactly what my thinking is that makes me do this kind of thing. The Rolling Stones say these words in one of their songs. If I could stick a pin in my heart and spill it all over the stage, would it satisfy you? Would it slide on by you? Or would you think the boy is strange? And what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me is you have made me not feel strange. And I am so grateful for that. And I'm so overwhelmed with gratitude for it. Now, I want to tell you this. I hadn't worked a perfect program, but when I got... I bet you couldn't have guessed that, could you? You can't tell that I would be a little obsessive, can you? When my alcoholism got really bad, I was 20 years old and I was in a psychiatric unit. I had cirrhosis of the liver. I had hepatitis because drinking ain't the only thing I did. You probably can't look at me and tell I might well smoke a joint, can you? But what I decided in that psychiatric unit was this. When I was in a group therapy session, there was a guy that was 5 years older than me. I was 20. I spent my 21st birthday in Four South Psychiatric Unit, Jackson's Hospital, because there wasn't no alcohol and drug treatment programs. And while I was up there, there was a little counselor in a session, and me and this other guy were alcoholics, and the rest of those people were crazy. We weren't. Okay. Let's make no mistake about that. We were not crazy. Right? They were crazy. But the clinician looked around the room and asked my friend, she said, "How do you feel?" And I'll never forget this, man. He put his head between his hands and put his elbows on his knees in that group therapy session, and he really thought hard about how he felt, and this is what he told that lady. He said, "Lady, I'll tell you how I feel. I ain't satisfied. I ain't satisfied drunk. I ain't satisfied sober. I ain't satisfied." Man, when he said those words, it was like he had taken them out of my heart. I thought, God, that is me. I can't find any ability to be satisfied at all. Now, I didn't know that then, but this is what he was saying, okay? This is out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the chapter entitled "The Doctor's Opinion." Men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. While they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are irritable, restless, and discontented unless they can again experience that sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others take with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless that person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for their recovery. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is where I have found that change. But I'm going to sum this up quickly because my time's a little limited. When I first got sober, I clung tightly to those 12 steps. But the longer I was sober, they didn't become quite as important. They were. I didn't want to drink. That was really what I wanted. The truth is this. I only wanted enough God in my life not to drink. That's all I wanted. I didn't want no more, okay? Because I was raised by people going to Daytona Beach, Florida to bike week because my dad raced motorcycles and drank a few beers. And then when I got sober, he quit drinking. But the truth is, I like girls to take their shirts off and I like loud motorcycles. And I didn't want but just a little bit of God, okay? Just enough not to drink or do no dope. And I rocked on like that for 17 years of recovery. And I was I had a lot of things in my life, but... And a lot of good things. I sponsored a lot of people, helped a lot of people get well. But at 17 years sober, I decided I was going to kill myself. And I called this guy that I really respect in AA, and I said, "Man, tell me what I am to do." And this is what he said. He said, well, he wasn't home. I told his wife. I said, "I need to talk to Don." She said, "Well, he's not here." I said, "Well, tell him it's not anything real important. I'm thinking about killing myself." And in a little while, he pulled up in his truck to my car lot. And he said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Man, I'm quick to anger. I'm miserable. I'm irritable. I'm restless. I'm discontented." He said, "You know what, Joe? I've seen you help more people than anybody else I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have known many." He said, "But I think where you're slipping in your program is steps 10, 11, and 12. And I got focused on those. And I forged a relationship with God that has given me an unshakable faith. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm going to say this. In chapter to the Gnostic, it says, be quick to see where religious people are right. They have an ability to live. I can't quote it, but find it. Now I'm gonna leave you these treasures that my sponsor gave me, and then I'm gonna wrap this thing up with one more story. My sponsor Don, man, he was so cool. He would say things like this. He would see me with a female that I knew was gonna fix me. And he would look at me and he'd say, you know, Joe, two ding-a-lings don't make a bell. I was 17 years sober. I decided I was going to date a girl with 3 months of recovery. I called Don up and I said, look, I want to date this girl. She ain't got but 3 months. He said, you better get her before God does, because if God gets her, she won't have nothing to do with you. He was sponsoring a friend of mine. This guy was calling him up every night talking about how crazy his wife was. He said, man, she's crazy. Don heard it for 2 weeks every night. Hey, I don't know what I'm going to do with her. She's crazy, Don. She's crazy. 2 weeks later, this is what Don said. He said, have you got a pistol? He said, yes. He said, you go get that pistol and shoot that bitch in the head. He said, Don, I can't do that. He said, then I reckon you're going to have to accept her, ain't you? If he had a sponsee that called him up during the day and said, Don, I'm going to kill myself. This is what Don would say. If you hadn't done it by 8 o'clock, I'll see you at a meeting. And he'd hang the phone up. Ain't done it by 8 o'clock, I'll see you at a meeting. He said that a man will only have two problems in his life, pink or green. If you don't understand that, see me after the meeting. This, don't focus on that. We'll help you through it, okay? Here's one of Don's classic things. Don said, if the only person that you can hug is somebody you love, you ain't got much of a program. I got a call one night that Don had bone cancer. And man, I can remember what it was like to hit the floor and not be able to catch my breath for crying. And I walked that man. He taught me how to live and he taught me how to die. But they had this first big speaker meeting at this my home group, Happy Hour group. If you're ever in Montgomery, Happy Hour is a cool group. So they had their first speaker meeting they ever had, and they asked Don and me to speak. And when we got there, man, it was a packed house. I mean, I ain't never seen so many people literally in that meeting. It was huge, man. It was huge. And I spoke before Don, but Don had had bone cancer for about 6 months, and, man, he was not well. And I sure was glad I went first, because I couldn't have gone behind him, you know. Because let me tell you what Don did. He walked up to the podium, and this is what he said. He said, I want y'all to know how grateful I am for Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to live long enough to get cancer. Man, I still get goosebumps when I think about that, you know. When Don died, he was getting really bad, you know. And that guy who he had told to shoot his wife, he went up to the hospital to see Don, and he called me on the telephone. He said, "Man, I just left up there at Don. He ain't good." I said, "Really, Ori, man?" I said, "God, I don't know what to think about that." He said, "Well, you know what? I asked him who I was going to get for a sponsor when he died." I said, "No, you didn't." I was appalled. I said, "What'd he say?" He said, "Ori, you don't need a sponsor. I'm not dead. You live one day at a time." I'm going to wrap up with this story. Don had just started sponsoring me, and I had gone to Pensacola Beach, Florida, and I was camping out with two females at a place called Fort Pickens. If you've ever been there, it's a cool little place. So we're camping out. It's about 11 o'clock at night, and a guy pulls in an orange microbus, orange Volkswagen microbus. That's a diagnosis, ain't it? Yeah. It is, man. I look like some crap I'd be driving, you know. He come pulling up. He gets out of the van, and he's hammered, and he sees these two girls. So he's very excited because he likes women, you know. I can relate. So he comes running over to our campsite, and I said, "Hold on just a minute, cowboy. You just spin around and head right back on over there and get in your van because we don't want you around here." And he looked like I'd hit him in the nose, you know. It hurt his feelings because we're sensitive like that, right? But he goes on back over there and he passes out. Well, the next morning I'm eating a biscuit about 6 o'clock in the morning, and he comes out of this orange microbus, and he comes running over to me like I'm his best friend. He don't even remember last night, right? And I said, "Hold on just a minute, cowboy. Let me tell you what you did last night. I had these two girls over here, and you come over here and pulled your pants down and started wagging your weenie in front of these girls." And he said, "Oh, my God." He covered his face up, and he said, "I'm so sorry." And he took I said, "I'm just kidding. Come here." I said, "I'm just playing with you. You did fine. Come here, have a biscuit, you know." He said, "Would you go fishing with me?" And I said, "Sure, we'd had a biscuit. I'd rather took an ass whooping than gone fishing with him." I said, "Man, I would love to go fishing with you, sure." So he gets a cooler that's as big as them chairs. It's full of ice down beer, and he drags it down to the beach. And with offshore fishing rods, them big old fishing rods, we get down to the beach, and he's casting these big rods out there waist deep in water. And I'm thinking, I've been to the beach all my life. I ain't never seen nobody walk out in the surf and catch fish. But, I mean, I'm not a fisherman either. That ain't what I go to the beach for, okay? But he's catching fish. Couldn't believe it. He's pulling these fish. And I said, "Oh, my God, I'm impressed." He says, "Have a beer, Hollywood." I said, "Man, I don't drink, you know. Please have a beer." "No, I don't want a beer, you know." And I let it, and this goes on for a long time. I'm not going to bore you with it, but just consistently. And the higher he gets, the more he needs. He don't want me to drink with him. He needs me to drink with him, right? Because he's getting a buzz. And then finally, timing's everything. I wait on that place where he really looks desperate, and he says, "Man, please have a beer with me." I said, "You know why I ain't going to have a beer with you? I ain't going to have a beer with you because I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous one day at a time for 17 years, and the reason I quit drinking is because I got tired of waking up in the morning not remembering what I did." And it looked like I had hit him in the face. He got real quiet, and he keeps casting that rod. And in a minute, he looked at me and said, "I was sober in AA once for 2 years." And I looked at him and said, "Well, let me tell you something. Don't you never forget this. We need you. Because there's going to be a guy that's going to walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and there's going to be only one soul in the whole world that can touch that man's life, and that soul will be yours." And I said, I sure do hope that you're there when he gets there. And I embraced him and hugged him. I said, I enjoyed fishing with you. And I left him with his thoughts. True story. You know, my little car lot, at one time it was a lot of drinking and gambling, you know, old times, you know, when I was a kid. And then when I got sober and started running it, it became an AA meeting 24 hours a day, you know, recovering people. See, because I believe that the drunks that were down there were looking for something. They were looking for a spiritual connection, and they found it in alcohol, and they found it in their friendships. And that's what we're doing. We're hunting that spiritual connection, you know. And we found it in AA. I could tell you more about what went on at the noon meeting than the people that were there, because there were so many AA people. 6 months after that, this guy walks into my car lot and he said, I'm in treatment over in Jackson, Mississippi, and I got ready to come home on my first pass. This was a desperate alcoholic. I've known him for years. And he said, when I told them I was going home and that I was real scared because I hadn't been sober home in a long time, you know. He said, one of them guys looked at me and said, where's home? He said, Montgomery, Alabama. He said, do you know Hollywood? He said, yeah, I know Hollywood. He said, you tell him that the guy he went fishing with at Fort Pickens been sober for 6 months. And you know what? That's a great story. And I've told that story for the last 12 years in my talk. But the truth is this, man. I know AA is strong, but I've seen a lot of people make 6 months. And when I'd tell that story, I would think, you know what, that guy did get 6 months, but, you know, who knows whether he really made it or not, because we know a lot of people that don't. I have a urologist friend that I ride motorcycles with. He's from Montgomery. He loved motorcycles so much that he moved to Rapid City, South Dakota, and started a practice so he could be at Sturgis every year. He's one of the wildest people I have ever met, and I have had friends do life without parole more than one. He is wild, okay? But anyhow, he moved to Rapid City, South Dakota, and I'll go stay with him at Sturgis. True story, he's got an airplane. So I hadn't talked to him in a while, and I was having some prostate issues. I hate to throw that out there, but it's the truth, you know? And so my wife said, you need to call Will because he's a urologist. And I said, I'll call him. And I never would. And finally she said, please call Will. I said, okay. And I'm okay, by the way. But if you've never had a prostate biopsy, man, you just ain't lived, okay? But anyhow, okay. So I called Will up. Soon as Will answers the phone, so help me God, this is what Will says. Now, Will is an extreme skier. He's one of the craziest people I've ever met. He's got an airplane. He said, Hollywood, I got to tell you this story, man. I said, what? He said, you got to listen to this now. I mean, I ain't even got to ask him about my prostate, you know. You got to hear this. I said, what? He said, I flew my airplane to Wyoming. And he said, me and Vida landed on a grass strip in the middle of nowhere. Now, that's how he rolls, okay? He said, we land on a grass strip in the middle of nowhere, and we take backpacks, and we hiked out into the wilderness for 40 miles the first day. He said, the next day, we hike 45 miles into the wilderness. Now, he said, there ain't a trail nowhere. And he said, so help me God, there ain't nobody nowhere. We were so far out there that, man, there just ain't nobody, you know. And he said, all of a sudden, a dog runs out of the bushes. And he said, hey, buddy. And he's grabbing his head. How you doing, sport? You know. And he said, all of a sudden, I hear the rustling of leaves, and two men walked out on us. And he said, one of them guys looked at me and said, you sound like you're from the South. Where are you from? He said, I'm from Montgomery, Alabama. He said, do you know Hollywood? He said, man, me and my wife love Hollywood. He stays with us every time he comes to Sturgis, South Dakota. Hell yes, we know him. He said, you tell him the guy he went fishing with at Fort Pickens has got 10 years. You know what, man? That hand we just gave was to God. Because I ain't done nothing but been an instrument. And the truth is, I was busting that guy's chops. I had no idea that I was going to have the impact on that man's life that obviously God did. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Alcoholics Anonymous is about loving on the unlovable. And if nobody wants you, we want you. Thank y'all for listening to me.